Austin, how you doing?
Hey, Brian, I am well. You're live in my basement, in my garage, actually, because of some technical difficulties. So I appreciate your patience.
Well, you got half decent sound quality for being in your basement or garage.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, this is where I listen to your podcast while I run on my treadmill.
Oh, you listen to my podcast? Austin, you're just trying to make me feel good. Is that what you're trying
to do? Yeah, I'm already stroking your ego. We're just starting, too.
Welcome to the aggressive life. Man, I tell you, there's one thing that I have a soft spot about. It is people who are men of the cloth, you might want to say, or clergy or pastors that have a masculine tone to them. One of my favorite Hollywood players ever was the pastor in... Oh, what's the name of the Mel Gibson movie? Dirt, was it? Not Braveheart. What was the one follow-up to that? The one, 1776?
The Patriot.
Patriot. Was the did you see that movie, The Patriot?
Yeah, it was great.
Do you remember that? You remember the pastor?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, he was awesome. He was fantastic. Hollywood doesn't display those of us who are pastors by day as very manly. And truth is, there's... a lot of unmanly pastors, which is fine. God loves all pastors, all people, no worries. I'm just saying it kind of turns me on. Well, today we got a guy who, I'm reading his profile. I've looked into him and I'm going, wait a minute. Is this what the modern day chaplain is like? Austin Knight is a modern day chaplain who is a paratrooper in the Arctic. I don't know. You leading seals to Christ? I don't know what he's doing, Dirt. This is going to be. Let's just talk to him right now. Welcome to the aggressive life, Austin Knight.
Hey, you started out strong. You related me to Mel Gibson, and I wish I could be that heroic in that movie, but I appreciate the intro.
Yeah, well, Dirt and I talk about who's going to be on the show, and he gives me the profile. I go, yeah, I like that. Let's go ahead and figure that out. And, somewhere in when we had our initial thought and talk about this to when I actually read the notes, it didn't cross my mind that it was you were a chaplain. I was just drawn to the adventure of paratrooping in the Arctic and like the chaplain piece, like, whoa, awesome. So just tell us your story.
Yeah, absolutely. So just some clarification. So the United States Army Chaplain Corps, they have two parts to it. So they have the officer side and they have the non-commissioned officer side. So the officer side is the typical right chaplain that you would call. They have a master's in divinity. They're one of the three direct commission people in the United States Army, And the non-commissioned officer side is a little bit different. Its technical term is the religious affairs specialist. A lot of people call me chap, right? It's similar to like you would call your medic, all right, doc, right? And so it's just a term that you gain. But the technical term is religious affairs non-commissioned officer in the chaplain corps. And the best part about it is that the Army allows me to do what the soldiers are doing, right? It's not a come and see me if you need me ministry. It's, hey, I'm right here next to you. And they afford us all of those opportunities to do, like you were just talking about, be a paratrooper, serve in the Arctic, be a jump master, all of those things. And it has been a tremendous blessing. I was a pastor before I joined the Army. And this is a lot of the same in that regard, but it's definitely more challenging and I needed it.
So the government is paying you, you're raising your support. Where's that coming from?
Yeah, I get a paycheck as a regular U.S. Army soldier. And on the 1st and the 15th, the Department of Defense puts money in my paycheck or in my bank account. And
wow. Yeah. And you're an officer?
A non-commissioned officer. So an enlisted non-commissioned officer. Like I said, it's just two parts of a unit ministry team. You have your officer and your non-commissioned officer that serve alongside you, make up the unit ministry team.
What's the difference between commissioned officer and non-commissioned officer?
Yeah, so in the chaplain corps, it's that master's in divinity, right?
Oh,
and
it.
So
okay.
It's that's really all it is from a difference of what the requirements are to serve.
Got it. Okay, so tell us go back to basic. You had to do basic camp. You had to through everything. So what? Tell us what the process is.
Right, and that's one of the best parts. I actually kind of wanted to go to basic training. I had no idea. I grew up with a mom and a sister, and we watched Disney movies. I didn't watch war movies. I didn't watch Mel Gibson and The Patriot, right? And so I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I thought I was joining the chaplain corps. I thought it would just be like, you know, wake up and pray and then go do fun things. But no, it was in Fort Benning, Georgia. I was the only religious affairs specialist that was in this group at Fort Benning, and hot as can be in the middle of summer. And we did the real deal, all 12 weeks of basic training. And for me, people might laugh, but it was tough. But I learned so much about myself in those 12 weeks of what it means to have some discipline, to have some grit, some resiliency, have somebody tell you what to do.
Yes, right?
Like that's kind of foreign, right?
It is. You're in Alaska right now.
I'm in Alaska right now.
Dude. All right. So that's like my favorite place in the world. I'm doing a motorcycle trip there this summer. I'm going to ride my bike from Cincinnati up through Fairbanks to Prudhoe Bay. Can't drive, ride any further north, and then back down to Anchorage near where you are, because it's the last of the wild, the last frontier.
Yeah.
Had you been to Alaska before you were serving with the military?
No. So I was serving at Fort Benning. And I worked at the airborne school. That was my first assignment. I got to jump out of airplanes five times a week, three times a month. And in the Army, you have to swap out, right? You have to move. And I had some opportunities to go to some cooler units, some special things. And the Alaska sparked my interest, right? And so I wanted to do something aggressive, right? Inspired maybe by your podcast. And so my wife and I, fiance at the time, we got married, hopped in a car from Cincinnati, drove to Alaska in a 28-day trip.
Wow.
Her first ever time camping was in Indiana. And she's a trooper now. She wants to take our little one-year-old out camping with us.
So you're married and have a one-year-old?
Yes, yeah. And he is, that's been a challenge for sure, more than I expected. But not the marriage part, but the one-year-old. And it's been a lot of fun. So
are you away from the family a lot in your current role?
You know what? That is something that I have struggled with and I didn't expect from a mental standpoint, right? I didn't expect how much I would miss my son. Right. And on a 5-day, like in the civilian world, dad going away for mom going away for 4 or 5 days on a work trip, that's fairly normal. Right. And but we just finished a field rotation up in Delta Junction, and it was negative 46 degrees. It was 50-mile-per-hour winds. Like, it was insane. But the hardest part was missing my son, and didn't expect that feeling. And we were gone for about 20 days.
Wow.
And that's a short side. Right. And that's the challenge I didn't anticipate when I joined fatherhood. Right. Because I, short of serving the King Jesus, right? Like, I want to be a wonderful father next. Like, that's right in my priority list. And that's been a real challenge with the military. And so it's something my wife and I discuss all the time of being away from home.
20 days is a long time. And I would probably disagree with you that people being away from work 4 or 5 days is normal. That, I mean, that happens, but it's very rare, especially in today's modern work environment where the employee has the power, which some of us probably pretty good.
Right.
There people aren't doing 4 or 5 days. I mean, there are some, but that's an old school American corporate thing that I don't know that exists anymore.
Yeah, and part of what you're discussing and the idea that I think that's normal is how the military pushes you to accept some of those things, right?
Yeah.
For me to say 20 days is short. Like, my wife was wrangling a 1-year-old while I'm outside in negative 46 degrees. She had it harder than I did, right? And so, but yeah, it's funny you say that, because what we accept as normal in the military, in just my 6 years in, looking back in civilian world, it's like, that's a foreign land, it seems.
Right. So you get through basic training. When did the paratrooper piece come in, or was that always the plan?
Yeah, so had no idea what a paratrooper was, right? I had no idea what it meant to be in the airborne. They just asked if anybody wanted to be airborne at MEPS, like, right, your initial entry station. Raised my hand, still not knowing what that was. But when I graduated from the chaplain school, I was honor grad, and so, like, just like happenstance that the Fort Benning Airborne School called up and said, hey, we need your number one. And that's where I was devastated. I was going back to Fort Benning. I had no idea. I wanted to go explore something cool. I actually wanted to go to Hawaii or even Alaska at that time. Little did I know I would work at the Airborne School be in charge of the spiritual development of 18,000 paratroopers that come through that school every single year, and just learn and embed myself in that unit to serve them well, but also to try to keep up with them, right? That's the hard part sometimes, is keeping up with an infantryman.
Did you have to do the same training as everybody else to be able to identify people as far as how to pack a parachute, how to jump, all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So Airborne, the best way you can kind of explain, you got the regular Army, a notch above is Airborne. A notch above that would be the Rangers. And then a notch above that is like Special Forces, right? And so cut above, right? And maybe there's 50,000 of us that are serving in paratrooper and airborne roles. But everybody goes through the same 3-week course in Fort Benning. And we've done that since the beginning of Airborne in 1942. Yeah, 42. Everybody's done the exact same 3-week course there. It consists of ground week, where you basically learn how to land. It's a parachute landing fall. One thing to kind of build the foundation on this is a paratrooper, right? We're jumping from 1,000 feet with a static line that automatically deploys our parachute. A skydiver's jumping at 10,000 feet. So this is a different sport, right? Like, we don't want to be in the air very long. We're in the air for 20 or 30 seconds, low altitude. So you hit hard. Huh. Right. You hit a little bit harder. You land about 14 to 18 feet per second. And so it's equivalent to landing or jumping from maybe an 8 to 9 foot ledge. And that's like the impact that you can imagine.
Wow.
And so the land is very specific. You land balls of your feet, your calf, thigh, buttocks, and you pull up muscle and you roll and kind of absorb this this impact. So we got to teach everybody how to land. Week two.
Low? Why are people jumping so low on a static line? Why aren't you up 30,000 feet and that kind of thing?
Yeah. So imagine 600 people at 10,000 feet. Right. It's just the wind is insane. Like, you're going to be all over the place. You're going to be in the air for a long time. Right. Think back in D-Day. Right. The best quote I've heard was Hitler had a really strong front, but he didn't put a roof on it. Right. So as you see D-Day and we're storming the beaches, that's the Ranger Regiment. The Airborne came around the back. Airplanes dropped in, dropped out about a couple thousand people, and then airplane took off again. And so you need to be on the ground as quick as possible.
Okay.
And so 1,000 feet, it's a non-steerable canopy. So you're not even able to really move around.
Oh, interesting.
Skydiving is an art, right? Like, the difference in skydiving from this to this, you're spinning around, right? And so it's very, very, very intricate of how you teach that. You can't teach that to the masses, right?
Yeah.
You can teach them how to land and how to exit an airplane. And so mass production, right?
Fascinating.
Right? Week two, you jump out of a 34-foot tower. There's a lot of misconceptions of why it's 34 feet, and there's rumors, right? But we've been doing this since 1942 at the same height. Who knows why? 34 feet, you exit onto a zip line, essentially, and you're just practicing this exit. Again, if you're not 1,000 feet, the difference from this to this will spin you around, right? Just really tiny differences. So you practice that over and over again, and then week three.
Hold on, you're jumping for 34 feet, but what do you have on you to jump for 34 feet?
You're hooked up to a zip line. Okay. So literally think zip line.
So it breaks your fall a bit. The zip line does.
Yeah. Well, the zip line just sends you down the zip line and you're not actually practicing landing or anything. You're just practicing getting out of that aircraft. So imagine 34 feet on top of it is a fake airplane and you're jumping out that door, right? That door is not huge. Jumping out of that and just perfecting the art of keeping your body nice and tight, your chin tucked to your chest, and then practicing what you do when you exit. You got to inspect your canopy, make sure your canopy is inflated. If not, you're activating your reserve, practicing that at 34 feet. You do that for a week, and then week three is the culminating week where it is you're jumping out of an airplane at 1,250 feet 5 times, and one of those, maybe two of those, are going to be at night.
Hmm. And you're not, again, just to be redundant, you're not like pulling ripcord. It's a static line. So when you get to a certain elevation, boof, your stuff goes up.
Yep. So my parachute is connected to a 15-foot universal static line modified is what it's called. It's a big yellow cord. And that is hooked up inside of the airplane. Actually, there's a command that the Jumpmaster will give you. Hook up. And you hook up inside. And as you jump, it comes off. And you count to 6,000, right? So you're 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 6,000. And then you check your canopy. And so it is open. You do have a rip cord. In case of an emergency, your reserve parachute is on your front side.
Yeah, now that I think about it, all the worm moves I've seen, that's exactly what happens. They're on a static line, they jump out. Have you always had a desire to jump out of an airplane, or is that just something you did accidentally out of ministry necessity?
Yeah, great question. So in that airborne school, right, I worked on staff at airborne school, better way to say it. The first 2 weeks are pretty structured, right, where you have to do your job and go home. The instructors are probably home at 4 or 5 o'clock. There's really no downtime, right? We're putting 400 people through this course, right, at a time. And jump week, there's a million variables, right? The aircraft could go down, as in break, not crash, right? But like the aircraft could go down for maintenance. The weather could be bad. We can't jump if it's over 13 knot winds. And so all of these variables, downtime. What a minister's dream in a busy environment, right? Think, take your pastor to work day. You kind of want to stay out of the way, but you want to be able to spend some time with them. And so jump week, there's so much downtime involved, but also I was needed, right? So because these are students, we want to verify everything is right before we exit students onto the ground. And so there's a ton of math involved that goes into exiting paratroopers, right? We can't steer. So we need to make sure we know what the winds are. We need to make sure that we know where that paratrooper is going to land. And so we do all the math. And then we send 2 staff members out per aircraft, per jump, to verify our math. And so what an opportunity. I can now spend all this time with these guys. And when it's time to jump, I'm going to put a parachute on and I'm going to exit that aircraft. I don't particularly enjoy it. There's really not much to enjoy. You're in the air for 40 seconds. It's pretty cool. At this point, right, I have so many jumps from just doing that for so long. I look back after 8 or 9 months of doing this. I'm like, wow, I can jump 100 times in 1 year. And that was turned into the goal during that season, was see if I am able to accomplish this milestone number.
Do you have a desire to do like classic skydiving sometime in your life?
Oh, I would have said yes before I had a family and some kids. And maybe not now. I've jumped out of an airplane enough, and I think I'm pretty set with that.
Yeah, I've got some people who are always saying, oh, you got to do it with me. I'm big into it. You got to do it. Our guy who runs our base camp property, where we do man camp, couples camp and stuff, he's real into it. He's always like, oh, come on, we got to get you out. You got to say, man, I appreciate it. I'm glad you keep pushing, but the risk reward just isn't there for me. Nothing I'm afraid necessarily of the risk, but the reward, I don't know. Yeah. A whole day figuring out, you know, how to do the thing, or the 2 days, and you have that, I don't know, just not worth it for me.
Do you get? Yeah, and when you do it all day for work, it's and it's expensive. Right. It's very expensive to do skydiving and a tremendous amount of jumps just to even get certified to do it by yourself. And so you're going to be strapped to somebody for months before you ever do it.
So as a chaplain, are you jumping with a gun?
Back to that teammate, right? Yeah. So the commission officer, the chief of chaplains back in the 90s decided no weapon or the weapon is not a non or the chaplain's non-combatant for both of us. But I get to carry a weapon and the commission officer does not. And so, when I jump, I either jump with a little pistol. Sometimes I jump with an M4.
Why would the commission? What's the thing behind the commission officer chaplain doesn't get to wear anything?
Yeah. So back in the 90s, the chief of chaplains was actually a Catholic priest. And at that time, there was some pressure from the Catholic churches that they didn't want their chaplains to carry a weapon. And so the Catholic priest was like, well, if I make that determination for all Catholic priests, what commander wants a Catholic priest? He's just going to ask for a chaplain that can carry a weapon. And so it was across the board,
right?
Nobody carries one. And so that's still the kind of the rule that we fall under, which makes me like my job a little bit better. I can go out to the range and shoot with the guys.
That's a horrible decision. I mean, horrible. Yeah. I mean, if you, if you don't want to carry a gun, great. If you got a, if you have a spiritual, biblical, philosophical reason that you couldn't carry a gun, respect that totally. But to certainly tell somebody in the army who's going to be in harm's way that you can't defend yourself, that's weird. Right. That's really weird.
Yeah, and makes you think about which route you want to go, right?
Yeah.
Right. I get to carry a weapon.
Right. Yeah, so why would you become a commissioned officer then? Are they getting more money than you getting?
Oh, yeah. You get a little bit more money, but yeah, there's less time to spend with the guys. And so there's benefits to both sides. And I really like the idea that I went through basic training, right? Like right. The commissioned officer doesn't. I don't have to sit in staff meetings all day, right? Like nobody's really going to ask where I'm at. And I can spend time with the guys. And I really like that. But also, I've considered the Master's in Divinity route, and if I do that, I want to do it. Not that there's anything wrong with online schooling or whatnot, but I want to do it in person, right? I really want to have that spiritual formation that takes place from my brothers and sisters to the left and right of me and from the professor, and I don't want to get out of the Army.
Hmm. Right. Well, what was your vision for getting into ministry? Can you articulate how you had a, did you have a classic calling to get into ministry, or it just makes sense for you? How did that work?
Yeah. So I actually grew up in the church and went to, grew up with a single mom and a sister. And my mom heavily relied on the church to help raise us, right? Mm-hmm. I remember the pastor at the time, he would be at birthday parties. He would be at different events. I remember as a young man just going to going to church one evening, and they had all of these gifts under this Christmas tree. So it was around Christmas time, and I wanted to be the Santa Claus, right? I wanted to be the kid that put the hat on and hand out all the gifts to everybody. And they said, no, 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 these are all for you and your sister, right? And I had no idea what that was doing to my soul at that time, right? And realizing, right, I didn't know any difference. And so stepped away from the church in like my high school years. I was in the Big Brother, Big Sister program. And so I had a mentor who actually went to Crossroads for years. Wow. Jacob is a wonderful man. And so I would go to church with him a little bit, but right, and didn't really take it seriously. And then my little cousin was being baptized. I was probably around 20, so I go back to church. Not that I was opposed to church, I just didn't really connect. And that Sunday happened to be that church's 50th year anniversary. And they played videos of these people on the screen. And I didn't know their name, but I remembered them, right? They were there for me as I was growing up. And they cared for us spiritually and tangibly with gifts and whatnot. But they just loved us. I didn't know who they were, but I knew how they made me feel. And I'm like, this impacted my life. And so I was committed at that point. I know I was like, I'm going to go to church for 52 weeks in a row. And you know how it works when you go to church for a little while, you're recognized and they plug you into a ministry. And so I did like some homeless ministry and youth ministry. And for a while there, I was running the whole middle school ministry and just absolutely fell in love with it and decided to transfer to a different school to finish a ministry degree. And shortly after that was hired by the church and was ordained and started to work there full time. And I want other people to know the love of Jesus through my actions, right? And that is, I'm convinced that God has gifted me with some abilities to do that. Ministry is not always a microphone, and I hardly get one. And so I'm just going to be in the trenches and jumping out of airplanes, for lack of better reasons, with these guys. And eventually they ask why, and I get to tell them.
Yeah. All right. That's powerful. That's good stuff. And when did you connect the dots with ministry and the Army?
All right, here we go. So I worked at that church for a little while, and I felt I was crushing it, man. Like we were growing. I felt God had a calling on that ministry, and we had just finished like a youth retreat, like CIY type deal with middle schoolers. We had hundreds of kids going. It was a blast, and really, really started to love
CIY.
CIY.
Cover in yourself? What is CIY?
Oh, Christ in Youth.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know all this lingo. I'm not right. One of the cool kids lingo. I don't know. All right.
Yeah, plug and play ministry. If you, right, you can sign your kids up for like a VBS type week, right?
Yep.
And Vocation Bible School. I'm sorry for your lingo, right? And so come back on February the 18th, 6 years ago, and they told me that I am fired and I no longer needed to work at the church as a pastor. They gave me three reasons. They said it was not something I did with a student, right? I didn't make a moral, I didn't have a moral failure, but they said Austin doesn't do what Austin says he's going to do. And they walked me out and start driving home, obviously in tears. My girlfriend at the time had texted me and was like, hey, give me a call. And so I give her a call. She has no idea that I just get fired from the church. She breaks up with me on the phone. And right, I'm obviously like, what in the world's going on? Tell her, hey, I just lost my job, lost my girlfriend. She's like, what? Oh my goodness, hang up. Drive home. And I wanted to do ministry. I wanted to be a part of ministry still because I know that God had called me to do this. But I couldn't go back to a church, right? When you get fired from a church, it feels like you get dumped by thousands of girlfriends at the same time, right? It's like, it just rips your heart. I love these students. And I knew in that moment that people were watching, right? People wanted to see how I responded. And I knew that my ministry, even though my paycheck was ended at that place, my ministry was still continuing on because they're going to watch how I respond to this, right? The enemy wants me to do, right, what he wants me to do. And so I felt a call to still do ministry, wasn't sure exactly where. Long story short, I didn't want to do the hard thing, right? Do the hard thing. I Googled ministry in the Army and saw this position, saw this opportunity. My uncle was 20 years Air Force. He's like a father figure for me. And so he obviously was encouraging that, but that's a hard decision, right? I had to sell my house. I had to move from the only town I've ever known. And I had to go and do basic training, right? In Georgia. So that's a hard decision. So I interviewed at a financial consulting company, right, where every good pastor goes after ministry, and viewed that maybe this is a good opportunity for ministry. This is in Cincinnati. And I was multiple interviews and made it through all of them, and knew that the ministry and the military option was there, but it was a hard option. So when I go to fill out my I-9 and W-4, right, I'm offered the job at this financial consulting company. The lady there, her name is Michelle. She said, I feel like you're not super sold out for this. And, I felt like she invited me to share a little bit of what had happened in the last few months. And so, I share with her, she tells me she's a believer. She asks if she can pray for me. Right. We're in a Fortune, I don't know, 100
company. That's an aggressive move on her part. Good for her.
Absolutely. And it gets better, and I hope you don't tell me otherwise here in a second. But so she prays for me, and she says, hey, spend this week like in solitude. Spend some time just reflecting, fasting, whatever that might look like for you. And so I did. My friend Nate and I went down to Red River Gorge, and we just really prayed about it and spent some time together to determine, right, I have this offer from the military. I have this offer to go and be a financial advisor. And I come back on Sunday and I go to Crossroads, and you're preaching actually, and you were talking about this idea that the heroes of the faith had tremendous adversity.
Yes.
Right. And to almost expect it. Yes. Right. It's going to happen. Right. And but the leaders persevered. Right. Again, my ministry is still taking place, right? My students were following me on social media. They still love me. They still are. I'm still love them. They're connected to me. I'm writing letters, texting them. Right? They are watching. And this is a high schooler. Their faith is now like intertwined. It's messy, right? So when you're done teaching, this lady comes out and sings "New Wine," right? The song "New Wine," and I am. Don't tell me otherwise. I'm convinced it was Michelle from that lady that prayed for me.
Wow.
And she's singing "New Wine," and the lyrics, I mean, if you don't know them, look them up, but just resonate. And Monday morning, I went into the recruiter station and signed my papers. Didn't tell anybody, right? This is my decision. I feel God has called me to do this. Signed those papers, and they had a quick ship option. So they're like, hey, if you want this job, you got to get out of here by this date. I had to sell my house. I had to do all these things. And it just all lined up so perfectly. I had to get a power of attorney potentially to sell my house, but they closed before I was shipped off to basic training. I was sold my house on a Friday. I was in basic training on Monday.
Wow.
Yeah, my first day in the Army was my last day of my severance from the church I worked at.
Wow.
And so.
That's a good story.
Yeah.
Did you agree with your church that you didn't do what you said you would do? That was a problem with your mojo at that point?
Probably not until about 3 years ago.
Okay.
Right? I did not realize the discipline I needed to, how I needed to grow in discipline, how I needed to understand how my character is interwoven through everything. And what I wasn't doing was not egregious, right? Maybe it's filling out paperwork or, hey, I got this idea and I get it to 60% of the way and don't finish it, whatever that was. And so I pushed back on that, right? They're wrong. That guy's wrong. I was so happy to realize when that guy that fired me no longer worked there, like, and that's wrong, right? I need to own, because I can't change him, and I needed to develop that. And so when I was in basic training and on these, like, right, 12-mile rucks, some people, that's easy. For me, never done anything like that in my life. I wanted to quit. I wanted to be done. I wanted to go back and be a financial advisor because it was easier. And I had to keep saying, Austin doesn't do what he says he's going to do. I said I was going to join the military. I said I was going to go serve in ministry there. And so I needed to do it. And I'm still growing in that realm, right?
And well, so. And that's a normal thing for someone in student ministry. And I might even say, depending on how you look at it, a positive thing, because you want somebody who can relate to the students. You want somebody who understands their mentality. And generally speaking, those are younger people who haven't had the same amount of life experience and aren't as disciplined as they will be in 10 years, you know?
Certainly.
But it is what it is.
Yeah. And I look back on that and I tell people all the time, I would do it all over again, right? Because at the time, that place did not have the leader that needed to develop me, and I wasn't receptive to be developed in that way.
Yes.
I tell you right now, a drill sergeant will make that happen pretty quickly.
Yeah, right. Right. So the drill sergeants, they don't go, oh, this is Pastor Boy, I'm not going to yell at him. They still yell at you.
You know how often for the first few weeks of basic training, I wanted to, like, and I tried, right? Because I thought they would take it easier. They wouldn't let, like, right? You talk to a drill sergeant, you have to have your hands behind your back, right? And a position called parade rest. I talk with my hands.
Oh,
and I was like, man, trying to, right, make all these excuses.
No, right.
No, right? And being told what to do is a good thing, right?
Yeah,
and you learn very quickly in basic training. It's just easier to do it, and then you don't get yelled at, right?
Right. Tell me about the 12-mile ruck. How much weight? What was the terrain?
Yeah, so Army standard is 35 pounds. That never happens, right? Even today, when we just jumped into JPMRC, which is this Arctic weather thing, if you had 35 pounds, you're going to freeze, right? And so it's always heavier. We tried to weigh ourselves on a broken scale that we found in the barracks of the basic training, and we're convinced it's around 60 pounds. You have all kinds of terrain in Fort Benning, right? Rolling hills, but you're walking on hard pavement the entire time, and you get all the way out and turn around and come back. The hardest part is you don't know. Right, you're not in control of basic training at all. Right, you don't know when that ruck's going to happen. You don't know how far it is. You don't have a smartwatch to tell you I'm at mile 8. You're just going.
Oh, right, no smartwatches. They stripped that from you. Oh, wow.
Yeah, day one, and so you don't know. The greatest thing we found in basic training was a schedule in the trash. Right, we found a drill sergeant put the schedule in the trash, and so we smuggled this and we passed it around and wrote down our notes of, like, hey, this is what's going to happen next. Right, the unknown is something that was probably one of the more challenging parts for sure.
So, if you hadn't done a ruck before, did you have blisters and stuff, or were you in good enough shape and had good enough footwear that wasn't an issue?
Yeah, basic training does a good job of just ramping you up, right? We didn't do 12 miles the first day. 12 miles was the culminating event, right? Before that, you'd done a 7 mile, you'd done a 5 mile, 3 mile, and a bunch of rucks in between. And so you're fine at that point once you get to it, and because you know the graduation's there. But yeah, you definitely, I didn't know what moleskin was until joined basic training.
And when did you start doing the whole TikTok video thing that blew up?
Yeah. So, again, trying to find an in at airborne school was the, there was at the time we had social media, Facebook and stuff, and, for the unit. Right. And so I volunteered to get away in to be like, hey, if I can run your all social media, I can be with the guys more. And so, that actually became a really great ministry. These guys are doing some really cool things, and I get to capture it behind a lens and take pictures of them, hanging out of airplanes and doing really cool things, not the students, but the instructors. And, so I started to post those and on TikTok, because I had years. This is right when TikTok popped up. I had years of footage just of airborne school, just being on the ground with them, watching them smash into the ground. And so I started posting those things.
Yeah,
and
people smashing into things is always a win.
Oh, yeah. That, that gets you. Honestly, the most viewed videos are probably parachute landing falls and just students just, right? And so I started posting those things, and it took off. And it's been interesting because I can't go many places in the Army airborne community, and people recognize me from there. They know how many jumps I have, and they're just amazed by that. But it gives me an in to be able to share that with them and why I want to go above and beyond in that area.
And the Army allows you to have your phone and catalog that sort of stuff?
In TRADOC, which is training at airborne school, I was here in the Arctic. It's a little bit different, and so yeah, we because of the things that we train with up here, sometimes phones are not allowed.
Okay, so you're in the Arctic.
Oh yeah,
you're jumping out of the plane when it's negative 30, or what's that mean to train in the Arctic?
Yeah, so the Arctic Angels are the only Arctic Airborne Brigade in the United States Army. So we have 3,700 paratroopers up here in Fort Richardson, Alaska, and we are specifically trained to be able to jump in negative 30 or negative 30 and below zero temperatures. And so like for our last field rotation, we jumped into Delta Junction, and the field training started at 20 degrees, which is warm for us, right? And so, but we're still the only people that can jump. Like we jumped into an airfield, seized that airfield, and let the other ground forces come through. By the end of the training, it was negative 46 degrees, and our unit was still fighting and pushing forward. And just an incredible ability to know that we're the only ones that are doing this in the United States. And I'm very proud to be an Arctic paratrooper. And what comes with that is learning how to survive on the ground, right? The airborne part is just the ride to the Super Bowl. Once you get out of that bird, you're just a regular soldier, right? But you have to be able to survive with just what you jumped in with.
Yeah. What kind of train do you need? Like, wear your long johns.
Yeah.
wear an extra pair of long johns. Have merino wool. What kind of I know I'm making this simple here, but what kind of training are you talking about?
Yeah. So every
wear your mittens.
Yes.
Have
you'd
a neck
be amazed.
Warmer.
How cold is it in Cincy this winter? Maybe 20 degrees, right?
Oh,
10,
gosh.
Maybe
did
zero.
Did it get down to 20 there?
I don't even know if it got that cold, honestly.
Well, it was a cold one though, and it stayed that way for a while.
Yeah.
But you walk in and touch your doorknob, you're going to be okay. If you touch metal in negative 40 degrees, you in milliseconds you have frostbite.
Really?
And so, oh yeah, and so. Imagine teaching thousands of privates, right? 18-year-olds who just 6 months ago were doing algebra, probably sleeping in algebra, but doing algebra. Now they're in the Arctic. We have to teach them little things like that. And you have to assume that what you said, everybody knows, but we have to start at base level. And so every paratrooper goes to one of the three Arctic schools. I went to the isolation course, which is pretty awesome. Dump you in the woods survive in 3 days. And everybody else has their own variation of that. But they teach you that, how to wear your uniform, and the how to survive in negative temperatures, because it's different than freezing.
Thousands of privates having to manage their privates. Is it true? Is it true that it's so cold that when you take your private out and you whiz, that your field of urine freezes before it hits the ground?
No, but here I'll describe one for you. Negative 46. You take your wet wipe and you take it out and take it to your backside just that short distance. It's frozen.
Oh, wow.
And if you have your – we have Nalgene's, right? That's what we use. If you don't have that inside of your body at all times, you set it down for 10 minutes, it's frozen solid, and you will never unfreeze it, right? It's frozen for the rest of the exercise. And so if that's real life, you're dead,
right?
Like you have no water. And so, it's wild the little intricacies that you learn in – even just moving over the snow, like all of those things. And think about the Army. For the last 20 years, we fought in a desert, right? So all of our senior leaders, they fought in deserts for their entire career. And we've always had a unit here in Alaska, right? My uncle served up in Alaska. But we don't have the wisdom. We have the doctrine, but we don't have the experience. And so it's going to take 10 years for that to really trickle down into where your immediate commander has had Arctic experience. And it's just different.
Well, and our biggest enemies now are Russia and China, which are more cold weather environments, right?
Certainly. Yeah. And I couldn't even imagine the experience. But we actually partner with a lot of NATO allies like Finland. Like they have been figuring this stuff out for years.
Right.
And we send a lot of our guys to over there. And I'm talking, they could probably like outski some Olympians that we have, right? It's just amazing.
Right.
The gear that they have, right? I'm wearing to work last week, I was wearing prototype gear. So like, we're still like learning that. And you mentioned merino wool. This is the only unit in the Army that I know of that they let you kind of experiment for yourself. Imagine what a bunch of privates smell like with some silkies, because the wool's too expensive. They give them synthetic. 10 days into the field, you're with a bunch of privates in a tent. It's pretty smelly. I wish they invested in some
right. I mean, privates who are, you know, just young and hormonally oozing out of their pores and are just, not a bunch of 40-year-olds. They're
cool.
So here's a question for you. What ways, Austin, have you changed? How has this impacted your outlook on life? How has this impacted how you will do ministry in the future? How do you think this has formed you as a human being, where being in the financial services sector wouldn't have formed you?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. You said formation, right? And understanding that I'm being formed by something every day, right? Something is infiltrating Austin, and it's shaping me every day. And I didn't understand how even just the little actions, right, that you make on a day-to-day basis really impact the big picture, right? And so we could stick on the airborne mentality in this, right? And so when you show up to airborne school, you have to take a piece of masking tape, put it on your helmet, and you have to use these stencils to put your number in, right? You are now number Alpha 674. You are not Brian Tome. You are Alpha 674. If you don't do that right, when we're on the ground and it's in the barracks, how can I trust that you're going to do the right thing at 130 miles per hour in a C-130 at 1,250 feet when all hell hit the fan, right?
Right.
And so take that analogy and put it into every single day, right? And understanding that that it is the process that is the beauty, right? And so that formation, I look back and I say I would do it all over again. It's hard for me to describe all of those ebbs and flows and all of these people that came in to, you know, just chip away, and how God was just taking, right, some sandpaper and polishing in some areas and a chisel and rocking away in others. And I hope that when I'm 80, I look back and just so thankful for that process, because that's the beauty of it. But reminding yourself while you're here that that process is what gets you there, and how beautiful it is, because it's not going to be rosy and wonderful every day.
It is true that it seems like when we've in my day job have hired people from the military, it seems that they have a higher level of frustration with other people because they don't see follow through and what's the word I'm looking for? Consequences for people who don't follow through. Whereas they had that in the military. You agree with that?
Absolutely. So my wife and I went to Hawaii on vacation this last year as a baby moon, right? And we were at a military-only resort in Hawaii. And in order to be there—
That sounds fun. A military-only resort. What does that mean? Everyone has to wear green the whole time?
No.
What does that mean? Military-only. Everyone has to— what does that mean, military-only resort? Everyone has to sleep in bunk bags. What is that?
No, thanks to your tax dollars, we have a resort right next to the Hilton on one—I don't remember what beach, on the Big Island. I don't know. There's too many of them. But it is—I mean, you could choose to stay at the Hilton next door and pay thousands of dollars, or you get a discounted rate. And the only people that are in this military-only one are retired, so I'm talking 20 years— or active duty, right? Or Gold Star families and some other, but those are the things I'll focus on here, right? So you had active duty guys and you had 20-year retired guys. And so we went at a time other active duty guys, it was right before Christmas. So we were the week before. Most military takes leave right around Christmas. And so anyways, we were just the youngest people there. Everybody there were 20 years in the DOD, retired, and they sought out, right? You know how veterans are sometimes. They sought out the young guy and they want to ask him what you do, like where you work and whatnot. But what I noticed is all of them had such a rich story. Right? They've lived in Italy. They've lived in Japan. They've lived all over the world and done all of these things, and they wanted to share it, right? That's why they talk about it, because they want others to – that's why I'm doing this. I want others to experience this. And the military, while it's challenging, it's a catalyst to an aggressive approach in life to give you this rich life, right?
Yeah.
And they – I know they struggle to connect with even their family, because you just – you think different. You prepare differently. And it's not even because of combat and shooting people. It's just the daily in and out discipline. And you realize, like, it's something as simple as I get my haircut every 2 weeks and you just look professional and you look good. If I show up to work without a haircut, I'm going to be in trouble. But, like, just imagine 20 years of that mentality over and over again. It will isolate you, right, in some sense, similar to Christianity in some ways. But, like, I think that's a side note, but I think that's why Christianity really is going to work well with the military, because they're already accustomed to this idea that somebody else is in charge, right?
Interesting.
And following that will lead to a better life, right? I've come to give life and give it to the abundance, right? That's the drill sergeant will say that, right. But also Jesus Christ. And so anyways – I say all that, but this just this idea of a rich life, and it's because of the structure and the discipline that you learn while you're here.
We just did a vet camp, which we have, and I went to it for the first time. Or at least I went to a portion of it. I was asked to speak at it, and people say, "Why aren't you speaking at vet camp?" And I always say, "Well, because I've never served in the military, so I'm not in the whole vet camp thing." But they made an exception. And I came and I spoke, and I enjoyed it a lot. And I prepared this talk on how the metaphor of being a soldier is dominant in the Bible, consistent in the Bible, and we just don't talk about that. We'd rather have the metaphor of a child, which is true, or the metaphor of a caring community, the metaphor of a bride, a groom, these softer, nicer metaphors. But the metaphors of fighting and soldiering are all through that whole thing. And it was a really, really fun talk to give. And I think it's tied into part of what you're talking about right now. There's things that you get in a military lifestyle that actually help you understand the spiritual realm and help you perform in the kingdom of God, if that's your thing.
Yeah. And the Army now in regulation says you have a spirit. You have a soul, and they're starting to understand that, right? There's these pillars that they tell you, you will lead a well and rounded life, right? Your spiritual fitness, your holistic health and fitness with your diet, with your sleep, all of those things. But one category in there is now spiritual realm, and it gives us this tremendous authority to speak into that in a way that, right, you have a spirit. I don't care if you are a follower of Jesus Christ, but like you have a spirit, and you have to understand how you're forming that and how you're shaping that. And what a treat that the army has now put that in regulation that says you are issued, just like with your pair of socks, you are issued a soul.
Right. Interesting. Are there common needs that you see amongst the soldiers? I mean, you're overseeing 18,000, you said. 18,000. You're the pastor for 18,000, even though obviously a good percentage of that 18,000 isn't looking to you to pastor them, but they're under your care in one degree or another. Is there any common needs, issues, challenges, celebrations that somebody under your purview seems to share?
Brother, they need an example. Right. I read the other day that 62% of Americans identify as Christians and 4% are followers of Jesus. Right. And so I can run the numbers in just my 3,700 paratroopers and we're about 65% Christian. Now, if you take away our chaplains, that means about 40 people are followers of Jesus, maybe less. And there is a hunger for the truth, right? Like these young men, they go home and they are watching video games, TikTok and porn, yep. Right? Like that's their formation. They yep. go home to their barracks room. I can't tell you how many times that I like, right? You get 14 days of leave during the summer and a young man comes back and tells me he didn't leave his house, right? He didn't leave his barracks room because you got DoorDash delivered to you. You have your vape. So you got your nicotine right available or your Zen, whatever it might be. You have that right available. You have porn right available in video games. You don't have to leave your barracks room and they don't. And then they wonder why they're sad.
Yeah.
And right. So there has got to be an example because these young men think that the truth is on their phone, think that it is in YouTube or wherever this might be. But I know just like I don't wear any indication that I'm a follower of Jesus. But people continuously come up and ask why I'm different. I'm only one guy. And I'm arrogant, but I'm not arrogant enough to think that I can serve 3,700 men by myself and women. And so that is my challenge on a daily basis is helping these guys understand that there is a source of truth and that will lead to an abundant life. And that's my prayer every day.
They actually ask you why you're different and what are they seeing without the Christian paraphernalia that leads them to that conclusion?
Right. A light on a hill can't be hidden. Right. And
they're just picking up from you positive attitude, picking up for you, caring for your fellow person, picking up from you. You're not stressed when others are, picking up from you that you have a peace that transcends understanding.
Amen. Yeah. And here, like, I don't want to sound arrogant here. And this comes solely from my love for Jesus, right? When I met my wife, she said, I enter a room and people look, people seek ways to come and say hi, shake my hand, whatever that might be. And I've never noticed it. Like that's just always been. And I hope that it's because of my overflow of Jesus, right? I hope that that's what that is. I'm not a street preacher. I'm not talking in formation and telling all these guys that I'm just living day to day, living out my faith. And I can go on a run in the morning, and I will say hi to 15 people as I run by in the morning. This morning when I went to formation, people turned around and, hey, good to see you. That's not because of me. I'm not that remarkable. I know it's because of my love for Jesus. But hear me out. If there's only 20 of us, right, that are truly following Jesus,
right,
it looks different. It looks different when the alternative is sit in your barracks room, video games, TikTok, and porn.
Right. Right. Following Jesus is different than checking a box on a questionnaire whether or not you identify as Christian.
Amen.
So, right. Yeah, you mentioned something that's really profound. I just got done with a 40-day digital fast where I fasted from all news, all social media. Today is the first day I'm off the fast. So I could have looked at your TikTok videos. Actually, no, I couldn't have looked at your TikTok videos because you're colluding with the Chinese by putting your stuff on their platform. We'll have to have a rebuke session about that.
Yeah, I have done this for a couple years and I celebrated when I heard that you guys are doing this and you're leading your church. I think that the church, Imagine if that's what we do for the next, I'm talking Big C Church, and that's how we look different, right? And it's because we are not influenced by what is being poured into us.
But I've also made up, even before I went on the digital fast, I also said, okay, this year we're going to do something different. I'm not going to walk and look at my phone at the same time. If I want to stop and look at my phone, because it's something I got to do, if I've got to walk and have a phone in my ear to talk to someone, but I'm not going to be a dork and walk and look at my phone. And once I stopped doing that this year, I realized, my gosh, we've lost the ability to smile at another human being. You start smiling at somebody saying hello, they're really disarmed. Like, whoa, what's going on? No, it's called just being nice.
Yeah.
No one does that anymore.
Walking and talking on your phone in the military is against regulation. You'll get in trouble for it.
Is it?
And
really?
It has been. You can't have headphones in. You can't, right? And a lot of people think that's stupid, right? But like, that's why, right? It looks professional. It looks like you look like a dork doing it. Remember, we were soldiers. When you see Sergeant Major walk by, you better tell him, good morning, Sergeant Major, right? And he's like, oh, what kind of good morning is it, right? That still happens today, right? If you see Sergeant Major, you better see him. But also, if you see an officer, you better salute him. So you can't be on your phone.
Interesting. Dude, yeah. And that's good.
Yeah, it is. That digital with the TikTok, right? When you do look on my TikTok, you won't see that I posted in a little while, simply because
I won't look on your TikTok because I'm a loyal American and I'm not looking on your freaking brainwashed Chinese platform that's trying to enculturate me in communist values. And I'm kind of shocked that you're partnering with that.
Well, I'll send you some videos of paratroopers doing some cool things at old school, right?
They let a few of those in just so they can brainwash the masses. So you're just one of the placebos they use.
I see. Yeah. Yes. That's why I'm here in Alaska, right? Real close to him. And but what I recognized from that is I felt like God was telling me, hey, like, you are called to serve the people in front of you. And this TikTok, while it was fun, what it ended up being was it was just inflating my ego a little bit and pumping me up, right? I have 500,000 followers on this thing. I can walk into the shop bed or the commissary. People are going to recognize me. But my calling is to serve these people right next to me and in front of me. And TikTok was prohibiting me from even doing that. Not saying it's bad, but if you lean to one side or the other, it can be dangerous.
So if we were to abandon our patriotic duty to America and we actually start looking at TikTok.
I don't recommend.
But if we did, what video should we start with to take a look at your stuff? Because you're kind of a big deal there. Where should we start?
Watch just the insanity inside of the aircraft. Any one of those videos, maybe some of them are pinned at the top. Insanity inside the aircraft. It's so loud. And then when you exit, quiet, right? But then also look at some people smashing into the ground and realize this is a big deal when you hit the ground. And there's quite a few broken ankles that take place in this situation if you don't do it right. And so just focusing on the little things and that stuff is important. But anyways, focus on the chaos inside of the aircraft and how cool it is to be a jump master when you're up there.
Austin, this has been fantastic. I think all of us feel even that much better about our military, that we've got people like you in the military who are serving us and people like you who are in there serving other people who are the soldiers, other soldiers who are boots on the ground. So, dude, way to go. This has been a fantastic time. Is there anything you want to point people to? Like, if you want to just go ahead and promote yourself, promote your unpatriotic Chinese TikTok brainwashing, whatever it is, just I just can't let it go. I'm just enjoying it. And you seem to be enjoying it too, Austin. You're rolling with this well, right?
Yeah, I won't send anybody there. I do not recommend it. I am going to go old school. Shoot me an email. I love to catch up with people and chat with people old school. So I'm going to give you my email, austin.knight@yahoo.com. And I'd love to, send you a note back and hear your story.
You could do the come on. People don't. So some people just want to go see your stuff. So okay, we're on TikTok then, because you're TikTok. You're not on Reels on Instagram. You're TikTok.
Right? I do not have any social media anymore other than TikTok, and it's @AustinTKnight, and you can go check out some airborne stuff right there.
Austin T. Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T.
Yes, sir.
Austin, you're a good dude, man. Thank you so much for being with us. I didn't know that we had sort of a ministry, same church connection, or if Dirt told me that, I had forgotten about it. And dude, way to go, man. Way to be open, way to be vulnerable, way to be pushing yourself, way to have a kingdom orientation, and just to be who you are. I've enjoyed every minute of it, and I love what God's doing inside of you.
Right, thank you, Brian. I appreciate this podcast because over the years, it definitely has inspired me to continue to live aggressively. Thanks. Yeah.
Hey, folks, you just heard it. I don't know you're going to do what Austin's doing. You're probably not going to go start jumping out of an airplane. But I'll tell you what, again, that's why it's called the aggressive life, not the interesting thoughts life. I'll tell you what you can do. You can actually do what you said you're going to do. You could do that. You could actually take direction from somebody else and not just think they're an idiot or they don't know what they're talking about. He talked about some very core personal disciplines here that enable us to be productive and fruitful. So you might want to do one of those, or shoot, you might even want to check them out on TikTok. Hey, thanks for coming today. We'll see you next time on The Aggressive Life. Thanks for joining us on this journey toward aggressive living. Find more resources, articles, past episodes, and more at briantome.com. My new book, a 60-day devotional called The 5 Marks of a Man, 60 Days to a Powerful Life, along with all the other books in the 5 Marks library, are open right now on Amazon. Be sure to leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Then send an email to Dirt, that's Dirt, at briantome.com to get a free Aggressive Life sticker. Find more on Instagram at Brian Tome. The Aggressive Life is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio.